watching his finals games brought back so many memories of when the Thunder was in the finals against the Heat, right? Yeah. And you have to get excited for what's going on with in Denver. Great fan base, and they deserve a lot of success and credit for supporting their team. But we got up 1-0 on the Heat. You know what I mean? And so we know what that's like, and we know what it's like to be as a fever pitch in the city and to watch that just like slip away. But one thing that...
You think it's going to slip away?
I don't know. But probably not. The Nuggets are damn good. But and the Heat have shown the inconsistency. But as a Thunder fan, it brings me back to when we were there. And the Nuggets have a different history because like within a couple of years, we were in the finals. And it's their first finals game. And it's been like 56 years. So completely different. But one of the things I think that makes us like really qualified as Thunder fans to look at drafts is our success in our time seeing talent and hard work and
Shane, what's up?
And development collide. And when those things collide, great things can happen. And when you watch like the Nuggets history, like yeah, they're at a great time, but you go back to like the year 2000, they've had like three good draft picks, and they're like so obscure. It's like, well, Carmelo happened to fall to them because somebody made a mistake, you know. Sure. Then a second round pick turns into an MVP. You know, like it's really hard for them to be like, oh yeah, we know how, you know, talent and development and everything works. And I'm not saying we're like superior. It's just we've seen it happen over and over and over again. So, which brings me to, we're talking a lot about the draft and having this experience. Where do you think Chet Holmgren would go in this draft if he was alive in this draft?
I think San Antonio Spurs would have to go with Victor regardless. I don't think that they would think twice about that. So I would put him at number two, hands down.
Okay, so sitting at number two, right, if we had the number two pick in this draft, it would be very similar to how it was last draft, right? We had the number two and the number 12. So we already know, like, if we had the number two pick in this draft, who would we pick?
Chet.
If he was in this draft, theoretically, in this hypothetical,
anybody would pick Chet. Okay. I don't think there's a scenario that anybody would pass on Chet.
But so this isn't in one draft, but in one rookie class, we're going to see both of these guys compete for rookie of the year.
It's crazy,
If both stay healthy, you know, and we're hoping for that.
My money is on Chet. I'll be honest with you, and this is why: is because he's going to have more of an impact on the team right away. Yes, the San Antonio Spurs could make a mid run for the play-in, but when you see Chet go out there and play the defense he's going to do, the play, and then all of a sudden the offense that gets thrown in there that he can play, this is unlike anything else. Like we said the last year, our biggest weakness was giving up the offensive rebounds. That ends. I mean, Chet is going to be like gobbling up everything. And I think with that being said is that then it becomes one of our strengths. And everybody's been so focused on, oh, we could probably win 5-6 more games next year than we did the year before. You know, and I respect what everybody's saying. But the reality is that this team is way better than that if Chet comes out and he's a candidate for Rookie of the Year.
If Chet didn't come out, we'd be in line to maybe win 5 or 6 more games.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's just the linear like improvement. That's not anything else added to Chet.
Right.
And I understand people are like, well, you can't count on Chet to be healthy all year. I get it. But let's just say Chet plays 50 games next year. His impact in 50 games will be so significant that he will be still mentioned in Rookie of the Year, and he'll still be NBA first-team all-rookie team. That's how much of an impact he will still have.
I was thinking about it with Chet, and this is something that's very hard to predict, and it's reckless. So we're going to, you know, preface it with saying if he stays healthy. But I legitimately think there's a chance Chet could be an all-star as a rookie. And this is something that happens very rarely.
So are you saying like he would be like a Tim Duncan level coming into the game?
Here's the problem with saying Tim Duncan level, right? There's only one Tim Duncan.
I know. I wasn't trying to I'm just saying when Tim Duncan came into the league.
When he came in. And I think Chet could be in a situation where people look at him and they say immediately he's the second best player on both ends of the court for the Thunder. And because of that, the Thunder have made a leap to 55 plus wins.
Wow.
And they're like, who gets that second All-Star nod? Because you're going to get a second All-Star, and all of a sudden he leapfrogs the other players in Giddey and
in order J-Dub for us to get that at the All-Star break, then we're going to have 3 months where we win 10 games each month. If we're going to have the opportunity to see Chet in the All-Star game, because we need to have close to 30 games won by the time the All-Star game happens.
And Chet's going to have to be incredibly healthy, be playing at his peak game. But you know what? Like, this is not something that, like, oh, well.
I believe, bro. I believe, because you think about why the Thunder didn't play Chet at the end of the season, even though Chet was making it known that I think he was ready, right? But the reality was is that if you keep this young man healthy, this year is going to be an outstanding year for him. You know, like, this year could really propel us to the point where everybody's looking at us and saying, shit, Sam Presti did it again while we were all sleeping.
Because honestly, like, we've never seen a player in all the years of the Thunder, we've never seen a player with as much talent.
I'll take that, Ryan. Wait, like Griffin rookie year.
I mean, here's the thing. This goes to, like, something we talk about all the time. When you're a certain height, right, you can play your game, right? Now, sometimes people think, oh, this guy's 6'9", and he fits the athletic build. Therefore, he will develop a game, and then you find out it's Kwame Brown. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And they didn't have game, but they had the athletic build. They fit the profile, but they, like, it's a combination. If you're that big, we knew people that were that big and they just didn't have game. But if you're that big and you're a killer, right, then you'll be able to be a killer at that height in the NBA. You might just be able, able to be a killer in college if you're a 6'6 killer. But if you're 6'9", 6'10", and what you see is, like, a player like Jokic out there, and he's like 7 foot, and it's like, he's a killer, but he plays his game in a way that's different. But the thing about being his size is, if you have a different game, you can play it at that height.
Yeah.
Right? That's the same thing with Chet. Chet is in a situation where he can play his game. Now, the question is, how much game does he have? But there's no doubt about, because of his height, he's going to be able to play his game. Hmm. Right? Now, where does he end up?
I want to be honest. Let's talk about it, though, with Chet. Okay? Ryan just brought up that he would be more like Blake Griffin's rookie year than Tim Duncan's. And, you know, one thing that Mark and I, you know, we pride ourselves. We knew Blake growing up. We helped Blake with his game. And he played on our team, and his dad was a very influential person in our lives and teaching us the game. So Tommy is amazing. So the fact is that you would say that is great, because I remember Blake's rookie year, and it was a spectacular year. I don't remember who he played this first year game, but I think he had like 20 points and 15 rebounds in the first game. And if that's what we're talking about right here, and we're talking about, you know, Chet going out there and getting 20 points and 15 rebounds like it was nothing to him, then we're sitting at a position saying, okay, yeah, we underestimated what Chet could do. And the fact is that if there's anybody that we're underestimating right now in his potential game, I have to say it has to be Chet. Because we seriously, even though we think we know how good he is, like, there's no Richter scale on how good a player like Chet can be for the next 20 years if he stays healthy. And that's the thing, is that we have no idea. We can sit here and say, yeah, Chet's the future. But the reality is he could be far better than the future. He could be something that we all look back and be like, how did we not understand that this was going to be Chet?
You know, if you haven't watched everybody, you should watch the 18 and under USA versus France, where Chet and Victor went.
What's up, Archie?
Now, Victor had a hell of a game. But the thing about it is, you see when they're battling, which isn't all the time, because Kenny Lofton guards a lot, you know, Victor a lot. But you see yourself in a spot where you're like, these guys, like, they're in a spot where they are the only people who can really compete to stop each other. Like, and they weren't really pitted to guard each other against each other much, but it was like, just like, you just saw this ability where it's like, okay, they're going to be playing against each other in the NBA, and they're going to be running up and down the court, and just kind of knew it. And
yeah,
now we get to see this idea of them, and I get it. Like, Scoot is great. Brandon Miller is going to be have an opportunity to develop into an elite player, but I still think you put Chet in that number two, And
you have to. I mean, you have to.
And we've been obsessing about this upcoming draft. And it's easy to forget how excited we were about Chet during the draft. But as a draft,
but you know what's crazy? Yeah. Just think about this. This last year, in my opinion, if Orlando didn't go with Chet, they would have seriously, understanding how good J-Dub was, I think they would have seriously stopped and considered J-Dub at number one, okay? If they knew how good he was going to be his first year and, you know, for the future as well. If not, I think J-Dub has a legit chance to go number three, okay? So if you think about that, we still had a top three pick and Usman Jang at 11. You know, like, and then this year, like you said, we're bringing in Chet, which I think, and you think that he would be a second pick in this draft. And you think about that and understanding, like, wait a second here. Now we're bringing in the 2 and the 12th pick in this draft again. Like you just said, this is huge for this organization. Like, if Chet pans out to be the player that we think he could be, or is better than the player that we think he could be, we're set for the next 15 years, guys. And not just set, we're like a top team in the West, top team in the NBA for the next 15 years. Think about that. Because there's no way we're going to let these guys go. Like, some of these guys, you develop these type of players, right? Oklahoma has opened up its ownership to the Bank First owner, or the owner of the Bank First.
Okay,
which I didn't know that. A massive bank, right? And so they have the funds now. He's, I think, a multi-billionaire. So they have the funds to do whatever they need to do. And if you're developing players and you're able to keep them in your organization, trade out the other players that aren't part of your main core, and you just keep on rotating, and you can have a multi-championship team over the course of 15 years. And that's what I think Sam Presti has created here. And I think a lot of people are still trying to hold back and not say, ooh, I don't want to put in. I don't want to say that the Oklahoma City Thunder are going to be the best team over the next decade and a half. Like, people aren't willing to say that, but I have no problem saying that. I have no problem saying that I think the Oklahoma City Thunder is going to have the best winning record over the next 15 years in the NBA out of anybody. Might even be out of any sports team, professional sports team as well in the U.S. If you think about that, like, you've got the football, you've got baseball, and we've seen it happen before where the Oklahoma City Thunder was a top five, a top three, for like over a decade. I mean, out of all the professional sports in America. So this is something that we've seen happen before. So I don't think it's something that we're going to be able to see in our lifetime again.
Yeah.
We're not going to pass up on this. And to me, like, that's what's so exciting, is like the generational impact that this is going to have. Like, my kids are going to watch the Thunder growing up, and they already have. And then my grandkids are. And by then, you know, my grandkids are starting to be born, which my daughter will be 30 years old by the time that this, you know, complete teardown starts to occur, which I don't think it will be complete teardown. I think it will be a more semi teardown.
Yeah.
And it will happen over, a couple years, and it will just be able to revamp up again. Like, this is how the NBA is going to do. It's not going to be like you said. When a championship run is coming to an end, it's a complete clusterfuck. You know, like, we gave too much money here, we gave too much money here. The Thunder aren't going to do that. You know, they're going to be able to trade these players and valuable assets and continue to get draft picks for the future. And just build that way, man. And it's brilliant.
Yeah, dude. And keep adding, you know, a player like the 12th pick to your team. And
sometimes roll the dice and get a pick like the Houston pick that ends up being a top five pick the next year. Or, you know, like, the Clippers or the Jazz pick, you know, next year is lightly protected. So there's so many dice rolling here that Sam's done that are going to pan out for this team for the future.
Right. And that's a really exciting part about it. And I think when we assess it, it's hard not to get too excited. And when you kind of take the overall look at what's happening in Denver, and it's a much bigger city, but it just reminds us of what happened in Oklahoma City before. And we're like, it's going to come back. You know, this attention, the national media, everybody just wanting to know what's going on in with the Thunder. You know, it's like,
yeah.
I keep hearing Ramona Shelburne articles or like video essays, and it's just like, about Jokic this, Jokic that. Like, they're all going to want to know, how did we go through this process, right?
Sure.
This is the stuff that they're going to want to talk about later. And we've seen the groundwork laid, you know? Yeah. But if all of a sudden we find ourselves in, we're competing for the top of the West, and sure, quicker than we think we're in the conference finals, you can kind of find yourself back in that spot where all of a sudden the bright lights are shining there. And that's when we're going to look back and be like, you know, that letter that Josh Giddey wrote the fans, you know, is so meaningful. It's meaningful now, right? But understanding how intense the bright light gets, and understanding that that's how he feels about us as fans, is really important, because, like, it's like, for a team that is young and making the finals over and over and over again, it's a little bit like Beatlemania.
Yeah.
You know, it can get to the point where the local reporters have no access because the national media is butting everybody out. And that's why they always compete for these seats courtside. The reporters do, even in, when the team is bad, because they're hoping that when the team is good, they'll be able to keep those seats. But are you going to really be able to keep ESPN out of your seat? No.
Bro, I want Denver to win, I'll be honest. In a odd way, I don't like the hold the West has, or I should say, California and Texas has on the West. I mean, I can't remember a time that a Texas or Los Angeles team didn't win the championship. If you won the West and you had to play as San Antonio or Texas, Dallas, Lakers, Golden State. I mean, it's ridiculous, man. Like, it would be good to see a West team break that chain right there. But as much as I want to see Denver do it, I really fucking hope we can make it the first team in a while.
Yeah.
Think about that. If we're able to break that, you know, curse, I think that would be great. You know, like,
well, we saw, like, the East, it was, you know, for years and years and years, it was just the same teams, it feels like, from the East. But then all of a sudden, you know, you started seeing Milwaukee and Toronto, those types of teams break through. So I do think it's a new level of
era,
right? And
understanding,
like, people are going to want to know, like, we always talk about who's going to write the book about how the Thunder built this next generation of a championship, because that's what people want to know. Like, once you get to the spot where you are in the finals, that's when people start digging. And we're seeing it happen now with Denver, and it's exciting. Like, Jokic's story is great. By game three, or maybe just next game, I expect a lot more Murray stories coming out. Murray's journey has been incredible, and it's kind of getting like lost in the background. But his return from, you know, ACL tear, and, like, honestly, man, like, his ability to knock down shots, when he gets on fire, I can't think of another player that felt more like NBA Jam, I'm on fire, than Murray in a long time. Like, it's just like, he can't miss.
You know what? I was watching Joker in that first quarter, just observing how he was playing and really not taking a shot at all. I mean, at all. I thought about that, and I thought how, like, and everybody's going to laugh at me, and I'm okay with this, but I thought about Poku in that offense that we have and how the ball is always flowing through his hand, and it's barely touching his hand sometimes, and it's passing around. And I think of the impact that Poku could have without ever taking a shot inside of the offense. You know? Like, you see Joker out there, and he's just like, he's doing all these things to get his teammates open. And I saw it last year, and it got me really excited until Poku got injured. But Poku would get the ball, and he would be making these moves to go this way, that way. And it was impressive. It got me stoked, man.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, there's a level to his game where you're just like, it's pretty unbelievable. And if you're, like, sitting in a situation like the Heat, how do you handle it? Because the one thing I know for sure, and I've been saying this since, like, really the beginning of the Lakers series, is you can't double team Jokic.
No. But the problem is that there's so many, like, okay, I look at the Denver team as a big, nasty, they're going to throw the big guys at you consistently all the time. And the problem is that, you know, with the East and the way they are, it's a lot about small ball sometimes, you know, and understanding that, you know, that's kind of how it is. Or I would even say big guards that you know, create more of a small ball environment. And now you're seeing just what I consider bully ball going out there, is like just running into people, smashing them over. And the cool thing is that Joker is just taking this like relaxed output on it. He's making it so Bam's impact is less effective on defense. And the thing about that is that's how someone goes off for 50 points eventually in the series. And that's really hard to stop. I mean, I like how he is able to impact the game inside of the game. And especially if he recognizes that there's no way he's going to be able to score on a player, that he creates so many assists and so many hockey assists that they have to rearrange how they play him. And it's phenomenal, man. Like, when you talk about a player's IQ and understanding the game, I think you have to understand that Joker has to be one of the top IQ basketball players of all time.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And it's beyond impressive. It's something that, like, I've appreciated for a while, but last night, in recognizing that he was the best player on the floor at that time, that he didn't need to take a shot to dominate a game. Didn't need to take a shot to dominate a game. And I was blown away by it, man. Like, again, it's beautiful, man. And that's why I get excited about Poku, is because Poku doesn't need to take a shot to dominate a game. You know, and yes, people are like, well, that's a poor comparison. But yes, I get it. It's because Poku's incredibly young still. And he still has a lot of game to, you know, understand and get to that point. But the reality is watch Poku, how he passes the ball. Watch his assist. Watch where the ball's at and where his head's moving. I mean, he is a master of disguise passing that ball. And you see it, and then you have a few of those guys on this team. And then you see somebody like Joker just dominating. And then you're just like, holy cow. Like, what if we have three or four guys all clicking like this at one time? Like, what team in the NBA is going to be able to stop that team? Because if we have four guys that are able to create this master of disguise as they're playing basketball, there's not a team in the NBA that's going to be ready for that. And I really think that that's what we're going for. I mean, think about it. All the guys that we pick up know how to pass the ball like motherfuckers, bro.
Yeah.
I mean, the ball touches their hand, it's out, boom. I mean, it's beyond impressive. The backdoor cuts. Like, everything that we see with these guys, and understanding that there's going to be an open guy for almost every single possession down there. All you have to do is make the money pass, and all of them know how to do it. It's incredible, man.
Yeah, I was thinking about, like, maybe, like, Tim Duncan or Dennis Rodman. Like, who would you pick historically if you were going to try to pick a really good defensive matchup against Jokic? And then picking that player, maybe like
historic,
maybe like Kevin Garnett. Take somebody who's like a, you know, alpha competitor, and then put him against Jokic in your mind, and put him in a 7-game series, and ask yourself, how would that player defend Jokic? And I feel like they would all pretty much come away with the same thing, which is like he's gonna kill you if you ever send a double, no matter where that double's from. He's a better passer than he is a scorer. Now, he can drop 50 on you, right? But if everybody else on the team is clicking, you know,
yeah,
then everything will be easy for him. No matter how
you wanna hear.
Hard you make things. He just knows how to get rid of the ball so fast before he even feels the double.
You know, a matchup that I would pay to see prime Sabonis.
What's up, Miss Bitch?
Think about that. Prime Sabonis. We're talking.
Yeah. I didn't ever really original
Sabonis.
See him.
And the thing is that if you watch Sabonis, the original Sabonis, play, and the way that Joker plays, right? And the way that the ball leaves your hands, they would have to play one-on-one, and the rest of the teams would be running around. Dude, it would be so much fun. I don't even think that it would be one of those things that I would necessarily want to be like, okay, I want to see, you know, 140 points. But, you know, like, the way they pass the ball inside of the offense, the way they design the offense around them as centers, like, it would be so much fun to watch those two guys battle it out when they're both in their prime. And just to watch that game. The original Sabonis, who played in Portland there, and...
Dude, I would assume a great defender would take away, because you're not going to really stop him, and you're not going to even do that thing where like you can say like we're going to let the rest of the guys beat him, right? Like the truth is,
what snap, miss bitch. That's what you got.
What you really need,
I love it,
is you need the ability to take his ability to put the ball on the floor away from him. Now, it's strange, but you need to turn him into a catch and shoot person. That's it. If he's catching and he's like picking you apart with passes, right? And then putting the ball on the floor and he's catching and shooting threes at the end of the shot clock, then you're in trouble. So you just need to be able to push him out on the perimeter and take away his ability to put the ball on the floor. Now, it's impossible. Because the more you get up into him, the more he's like uses a little bit of like judo and uses your pressure against you and it spins moves different like misdirection, and next thing you know, he's between you and the basket and he's not going to let you get around him, right?
No, you're right.
So it's a challenge, but I'm like, if Kevin Garnett was like, I've got to stop Jokic in a 7-game series, and if I do, I'm going to win a championship. If Bill Russell was in that situation, right, they would do something. And I'm just like, I haven't seen anybody even do something that seemed like that Jokic like worked, like he's working, but it's like they're not taking anything away. And you're definitely not taking anything away when you double. So no more doubles, right? Play him one-on-one. And then what you got to do is make him score 50. And that's still not enough if the rest of the guys feel like out of the flow, right? Mm. So you've got to make him become what he doesn't want to be, which is a scorer.
What's up, Keelan?
And make his passing secondary. And if that happens, their whole offense could look backwards, because they have done an incredible job of surrounding him with really good role players and really good shooters, right? So if you leave those guys open, that's been a mistake all playoffs, and it's not going to suddenly not be a mistake.
Man, I got to say is I already know in every aspect that the type of person that can stop Joker for the future. It's Chet. Chet with his enormous length of arms that can back off him just slightly, where he can't shoot over, he really can't pass over. He has going to have trouble passing around him. Yes, you know, there's going to be moments where, you know, Joker will probably make him look a little silly, but the reality is that once Chet gets, you know, schooled on something, he's not going to get schooled again. And I think really what's going to happen is that Joker is going to find that like his years that he's having right now are incredible. But the new guys that are coming up are going to be the most difficult players for him to play against. Long, tall, lanky, that have fast feet, that can get around screens, that can play the opposite guy, that's going to make it hard for him to loft the ball. There's so many things that these tall, lanky guys that are coming into the league are going to cause him to have issues. So I look at Chet and I say, he's a perfect example of somebody that I would like to throw up against Joker to see how well he can do.
There's... like, some people have been doubling off of Aaron Gordon, and that worked sometimes. But in the end, like, if you let him play without a body off of the offensive glass, he's going to kill you. And if he's knocking down a shot, he's going to kill you. So there's a lot of situations. But, bro, it's an intriguing situation knowing the way that the Heat organization works and takes adjustments. I do have confidence that they could steal this next game. And one of the reasons I was excited for Denver to win this game is because you'd hate to see Miami come in and steal the first game in Denver and that excitement turn into fear.
Yeah.
Right, for the fan base. Right. So let them have this moment, but we've seen enough Heat stuff. Like, yes, if the Nuggets play their game unchecked,
sure.
Okay. Like, they're going to win in four games. Okay.
I agree.
But if the Heat can make an impact, take some things away, which is a trademark hallmark of Pat Riley and Coach Spoelstra, right? If they can do something, then this could turn into a series that a lot of people don't expect. And as a Thunder fan, I remember what it's like for the series to basically be over before you get to see it again. Like, you're excited, and then, boom, they lay the hammer down on you, and you're like, shit. They have experience. And as much as everybody's excited about what's happening with the Nuggets, there's two things to keep in mind. Number one, experience in the finals pays. Not just organizational experience, but these players on the Heat, They've been there recently. Okay.
Right.
So organizational finals experience and player finals experience matters. And we're going to see that put to the test coming up. The second thing is, as teams get to this level of pressure, right, things do happen. It's very rare teams can play perfect games all game. I mean, there was like the Moses Malone 4-4-4 Sixers, right?
Yeah.
But that's like the exception, right? Most of the time, it's going to take more than that. And if it gets to the ugly parts where they can muck up the game,
yep.
The Heat know what's at stake. I don't know that the Nuggets fully grasp it, although they seem like they're following. Like Jokic put their team on the back and said, I got you guys right now. And he just was unstoppable down the stretch, and maybe that's enough. But I want to see how this thing gets ugly, because that's what the Heat need to do, and they are experts at making things ugly.
Yeah, you're going to see a lot of frustration.
What's up, Eclipse?
With that Heat, those Heat players, man. And it's going to get crazy. I look at the way that the Heat has always held themselves. And if you look at Eric, he's been around the Heat organization since, what, like 94 or something like that? So he's been around for forever. And it's the same hallmark, you know, the same hallmark that Alonzo Mourning, when the Knicks were beating the shit out of him, Alonzo Mourning picked up Charlie Ward and threw him into the first row of fans. Like,
I think that was PJ Brown, but yeah, I know what you mean, man.
No, that I thought that was Alonzo Mourning that did it, but you could be right, PJ Brown. I don't know. It doesn't matter. You know, and I think about the Van Gundy and Alonzo Mourning. You know, like wasn't it Van Gundy holding on to Alonzo's legs, you know, and as like Alonzo's like, what the fuck? You know, like again, like this is the intensity that we all grew up watching. And last night, it just like Denver was just, it wasn't that they just, you know, put them away, but there was no question in my mind the entire game that Denver was going to win. You know, like what I watched is that's what domination is. Whether you win by 10 points or 20 points or 30 points is like you have a lid on the game since day one or second one. And I watched that and I was like, okay, that's pretty impressive. But where's that anger? You know, where's that fight that we're used to seeing, especially with Jimmy Butler? And it's coming, guys. I mean, Jimmy's going to find something to fire him up, and then that's going to ignite the team, and it's going to be two or three games in a row that they're going to win. And that's what I love about the Heat. I mean, seriously, like, the way that Jimmy is – I'm not saying that they're going to win this series, but I'm saying that Jimmy's not going to let this just go down. I mean, we all know who his real dad is. You know what I'm saying? So he is not going to let this go.
So the Heat went straight – to Denver the day after they won. The night they won against the Celtics. They didn't go home. Now, not going home, if you guys remember the finals, there was a situation with, I don't know. Do you remember when Dirk won his first finals and it was this whole thing about, like, I only packed one set of clothes, right? And it was because of, like, that's what the Heat had done to him with D. Wade and everything. And I just have the sense with the way that they went straight to Denver, it was like that felt like to me a Pat Riley move. Not that other people wouldn't have done it, but it was like, and oh, like Jimmy doesn't want to touch the Eastern Conference Final trophy, right? So he doesn't pick it up, right?
I'll take the next one.
Right, exactly. And I'm just like,
bro, that was baller, bro. I mean, like, that to me was like, I'm not fucking content.
I'm not celebrating.
This is, you know, I'm. It's game time still.
Game time still. And celebrating takes energy. I always wonder that. Like in baseball, they like celebrate, you know, getting into the wild card game and stuff. I'm like,
yeah.
Come on, guys. Like there shouldn't be champagne showers unless you hoist the trophy. I get it.
I mean, unless you're Patrick Beverly in the Timberwolves.
Champagne showers, baby. Dude.
Fuck yeah.
Oh man, and I'm just like, this is an exciting...
Oh, Miss Bitch, there is a massive rumor in the NBA that Michael Jordan is Jimmy's dad.
Oh, I mean...
So, I mean, a lot of people deny that.
At this point, is it even a rumor or is it just accepted?
It's just people saying it, and it's out there enough where it's kind of a joke, even with Shaq and Charles, so, you know.
I'm a big fan of what he can do, so why not? Let's see what happens, man. Maybe this isn't going to be a series, but I feel like if the Heat had won it, everybody would be already like, oh, this thing might be over for the Nuggets. So there was really, like, losing the first game in Denver, like, the Heat aren't behind the eight ball.
No.
So next game, it's all on the line. I mean, if they lose it, then they could be really close to be trouble.
But it's not, though. Like, how many times do we see a team go and win two games at their home like they're supposed to? I mean, like, to me, like, this is what this is about right now. It's like, you know what? So what? We lost two games away. Like, now we get to go home. You know, Miami's a popping place right now. So that's going to be a hot crowd to be in, and they all know it. They're all going to be able to boost themselves up with that. I don't know, man. Like, that's what I'm going on. That's what I'm pushing at.
And like, it proved to be a big distraction for the Thunder when we were playing in Miami. We ended up hearing years later that Harden maybe didn't actually go to bed before some of the finals games. I'm like, dude, that's a huge competitive advantage because, you know, Miami players are like, yeah, we're used to it. No problem. We're going to just not party during the finals. And Thunder players are like, I can't go to bed when there's this many strippers who haven't been paid. They're working hard.
Oh, speaking of James Harden, dude, you sent me that piece over. It was okay, like, so Nick Nurse, bro.
Nick Nurse. I feel like I've seen it. I can't put my thumb on it, right? But like, I feel like I've seen this type of stuff happen before where a coach was asked a specific question about a star player and they hesitated.
Right. His hesitation was classic. It was like, so
he was in the middle of James Harden question, but and the same reporter was like, what about James Harden? You're going to keep James Harden? He's like, what? So he heard the question, what? But he wanted time, right? He processed the question because he heard it a second time. Do you want James Harden to stay? And he fumbled it. I don't know if he did it on purpose, bro, but what he said was, he said, James Harden is a great player.
Yeah. And then he goes, but do you want him on the team? And he goes,
No, he said, well, James Harden has some decisions to make, or a decision to make. I'm like,
politically correct. I know. Dude. Mr. PC.
Dude, no. He done fucked up, man. He did not say yes. And he knew it.
Houston, bro. I'm telling you, it's Houston. It's been Houston. It's always been Houston. And Morey. No. It's always going to be Morey.
I like it, dude.
Morey is sitting there saying, ah, shit, man. You know? Like, I came over to the Philadelphia 76ers, got James Harden here, and now he's going to go back to Houston, where they have a really fucking young team. And they have assets to trade. They could go out and get Siakam. They could go out and get this player. They could go out and get this player. I mean,
he's going to look like a bum in a few years if he keeps it up.
I know, but it's crazy, man. Like Houston's going to be able to put a team around James Harden that he wants. And that's crazy to me. Like, I don't know why you would do that if you're Houston. But you know what? Go for it. Hand him the money. Like, if he gets injured and they have Damian Lillard or another old guy on their team, like, and they trade all this draft pick and assets and they have to restart their restart in a couple of years, fuck yeah, dude. They fucked up. I'm all for it.
I'm all for it, too. I think it's one of those situations where they might go way out of their way to avoid the like us getting good picks for the trade with, you know, for Russ. But at the same time, they might fuck themselves over just so that we don't get something good. I definitely feel like there's a good chance of that.
I don't, like, the thing is that I don't even care about that pick, though. Like, yeah. It's cool. It's sexy, right? It could be a 5, 6, 7, right? But the reality is the pick I truly care about is the Utah pick. The pick I also care about because I don't think Utah's done trading some of their players.
Isn't it, like, top 20 protected? I don't remember.
I thought it was top, like, 7 or something like that.
It's at least top 12, but I don't know.
And then the other one that we have is the Clippers unprotected pick, too.
Yeah,
and the Clippers
are coming up.
Dismay right now, man.
They're fucked.
So like to me, like, there's so many things that I'm looking at and I'm saying this could turn into this, this, and this, and we could be sitting at having maybe even top, you know, three top 20 picks, you know, like, and that is enough. Three top 20 picks, it doesn't matter if like one's 19, 15, and 10, that's enough to move up into the top 6 picks right there. 10, 15 and 19 is enough to move up to a team that's like, I'm not content where this is at. you know, and then we get another top six pick, top 10 pick. I mean, that's just, it's incredible what could happen with those picks.
Yeah. It's wild. And I'm just pumped, dude. I'm pumped about Denver. I'm pumped about their fan base. It's really good for the NBA to have more teams engaged and more fans pumped up and more communities. And I don't really give a fuck about ratings. Like, the last thing I want to see is another Boston-LA series. I want to see, you know, more fan bases ignited. And that's what I mean, obviously, we want to be a part of it coming up really soon. But the question a lot of times comes down to how long. And that brings us back to Chet, which, if Chet does perform at the level that at least I think he can.
Just think about it. If he outperforms what we think is possible for a rookie to do, where does that put this team? I mean, I know that puts a lot of pressure on Chet, who has never played a game in the NBA before. But if Chet comes out better than we think that he could be right now.
You guys fill in the blank. You tell
us. What do you guys think? I mean, like, I want to know. I want to know what you guys think. Because if Chet comes out.
People know what I think.
If Chet comes out and he's seriously that much better than everybody thought he was going to be, could we win 15, 16, 17, 18 more games than anybody thought? Like, you guys need to fill in the blank because I want to know. Because I feel like sometimes I get so stuck on, like, my envision of what's happening with the Thunder and what could possibly be with this Thunder team that, like, I'm like, 55 wins is completely possible. But, like, you know, from 40 to 55 wins is a huge jump. Huge jump.
Yeah, but...
So, I don't know. What's possible, guys?
Look, man. Anything's possible. Especially when you add an improvement year for Jang, a healthy Poku, and then on top of that, JRE getting back to what he can be, a year of improvement or offseason improvement for JRE. J-Dub getting thick, better. Bro. Man. Shay...
We're 10 thick.
Shay can take it to the next level, and he knows it. And he will. And that will be the leader for everybody else. And one of the things that people look at, they're like, well, how are we going to get all these guys minutes or whatever? Coach Degnall is, to me, the best in the league at development right now. And that's because he commits to giving the players minutes.
He's put around himself.
Right, but he follows through. Some people, trust me, there's a lot of stupid voices in the Thunder media who really question his decision-making because we end up losing some games because we give young players opportunities.
Yeah.
Like, we could have won more games this season. We would have had a sacrifice development. That development ended up paying dividends when players went down with injuries late, but we still didn't stop giving players development, even when it went down to two-way players late in the season.
Sure.
We're still going there. That, to me, means everything. Now, we saw him in the, you know, one-game elimination really shorten his rotation, so he showed an ability to adjust, which we hadn't seen in a couple of years because we'd been in development phase for a couple of years. Sure. So that, to me, says...
But look at what he's done to the... Okay, his first year of coaching that defensive team, like, we saw a huge improvement in the defense. The second year was like, holy cow, that's you know, we consider them top half of the NBA, even though they're probably at like 16, 17 ranked for that year. But then this last year, it was like, holy shit, top five team in the NBA for defensive team. So when we say we feel like the NBA, the Thunder are going to take that jump into the top three next year, it's just because that's where the progress is going. And I look at that and I say, we're the top three defensive team. With a player like Chet, with a player like Shea, J-Dub, Dort, our starting five. And then we got the guys coming off the bench that are Jay Will, J.R.E., Isaiah Joe, Usman Jang. Like, guys, we're so deep. It's not even funny. And the thing about it is that everybody always talks about keeping guys healthy. Well, when you're running 12 guys in and out in a game, you're allowing – you know, Shea in the early games to Gus to get wins and Shea not to go above 30 minutes. You know, those are crucial. Those are crucial to get guys back into playing game shape so they're not going out there and overworking. So this is crazy, bro. Like, what we could be doing and accomplishing and rotating those guys in and out is the most impressive thing I think we're going to watch in a long time.
I think sometimes we have an apprehension to get excited because we're like, well, this is our favorite team. And maybe we're too biased. But if this was happening on a different team, right? we would feel the same way. Like, bro, Shea getting first team all NBA, J-Dub second in rookie of the year, leading the guards in dunks. Like, Chet coming back, Jay Will leading the league in offensive charges and shooting 40%. Like, this is stuff that we have to look
at. JJ Redick talks about it, bro.
Right. You have to look at
it. And he talks about how scary the Thunder are going to be in a few years. I mean, like, this is not like, if you know hoops, you know where the Thunder are going, and you understand that this is a generational team right in front of you.
Right. And that's, I think a lot of times people wait for the national media to start saying like, oh yeah, we notice how good this is going. And then they kind of repeat what they're saying. The reality is, though, for Thunder fans who have been paying attention over the last decade, like, you are uniquely qualified in a fan way to judge talent and progression.
Yeah.
So don't wait for other people to say these things. Like, if you notice and you're like, well, yeah, these guys are elite and they're starting to get recognition, like, it's okay to, like, lose your fucking mind over this shit. Like, and if you guys feel how we feel, then you definitely know we're going to fuck with you, because that's what we like. I mean, we're getting hyped and we're just trying to keep each other, like, remembering. Today is all about remembering, like, we kind of sometimes forget about Chet. And this is, like, y'all motherfuckers, don't forget about Chet.
Don't forget about Chet, man.
What else, bro?
That's it. I love it, man. Like, you know, there's a lot of you guys that put some great comments out there. I've been talking to a guy named Just Junior about this draft, man. Listen, guys, I absolutely love the way that you guys all look at this draft coming up. Mark and I decided to take the day off of talking about the draft because, like, we haven't really got into Oklahoma City Thunder love in a while. And it was all about that today and understanding, you know, for us, where we're seeing this team go and making sure that we keep an eye on the big picture and not just understanding that it's all about the draft. This Oklahoma City Thunder team is spectacular. We know it. You guys know it. Man, it's fun times.
It feels like deja vu all over again, baby. Let's get it. We'll see you guys next time.
Love you guys.